Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is August 21st, 2019. Before I get started with this podcast, just a shout out to my dad. Happy birthday to the old man. Many, many more. He is definitely one of the best guys around. Always there without hesitation for his friends and family. Just a guy that's filled with love and wisdom. Always has our back, always in our corner. No matter the cause, no matter the journey, and having that level of support is priceless. And I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but there was, back when I was 18 years old and graduated from high school, obviously the family threw a, you know, a graduation party and the like, and, you know, I sent out a whole bunch of thank you notes, and obviously I thanked my parents, and I recall in that one note when I specifically called out my dad. I said, even at the time when I was 18 years old, I said, if I grow up to be half the man that you are, I'll consider my life a success. 14 years later, those words still ring just as true then, if not more today. So happy birthday, Dad. We love you. Many more. So today's discussion is going to be about a little bit of everything today. And the title of today's podcast is All the World's a Stage. Because I think that's what it is. At the end of the day, it doesn't have to be like that. But that's what it's become. That's what we, human beings, have turned this into. I'm going to get started with that, but quickly, just as a formality on here, the Capital News, we're going to get to the market news real quick. But that's what this conversation is going to be about. Yesterday, we focused on a handful of items. I was jumbling around a few different places. I wanted to be primarily focused yesterday on a fracturing Europe and Italy perhaps leaving or, you know, potentially leaving the European Union following ranks of Brexit. This all plays into everything that we are witnessing, and that is going to be the focus of today's episode. But real quickly to the markets, the S&P gained 24, the Dow was up 240, the NASDAQ gained 72 points, the Russell 2000, the small cap index gained 12 points, all representing an increase of about 0.8 to 0.9%. The Dow Jones Transports was up 1%, and the New York Stock Exchange gained 0.8% as well. Oil remains relatively flat from yesterday's podcast. WTI is trading at $55.70 a barrel. The international metric Brent crude is trading at $60.20 a barrel. Gold has pulled back slightly below the $1,500 an ounce mark and is now trading at $1,497 an ounce. Silver is at $17.07 an ounce. Uncle Sam's U.S. 10-year treasury is little changed at 1.58%. The VIX, the volatility index, lost nearly 10% today and is now trading at $15.80. So, there was some other news that came out today. We had the meetings minutes from the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve minutes from July 30th and 31st, their meeting, were released today. Obviously, the markets were somewhat on pins and needles, just looking for any excuse, looking for that tweet or that headline, something that this market was looking to break out of that period, that range of consolidation we were talking about the other day. And no surprise, I mean, the markets rallied on it because the Federal Reserve was contemplating an even bigger rate cut back at the end of July. It seems like an eternity ago. It was July 31st. It's only a few weeks ago. So what we've witnessed in that period, I mean, has just been a whole bunch of volatility, which is what we had predicted here because Congress is on vacation. The Federal Reserve did not have a meeting this month. So we anticipated a whole bunch of volatility. And that's exactly what we have been witnessing through the first 3 weeks of August, which I imagine we will continue to see this through the remainder of the year. But according to the minutes, the Federal Reserve was contemplating an even bigger rate cut. Now recall, they cut interest rates by 25 basis points. So something bigger would be 50 basis points. And don't forget, they also ended quantitative tightening. Okay, and we said that was very important to notice if they did something with quantitative tightening, and they did. They they called it off. They said, that's it. They were supposed to call it off in September. They cut it off early at the end of July. So that was something different, okay? However, the minutes also disclosed the fact that the board members were concerned with having unity around, this is just going to be one rate cut. This is going to be that, quote, mid-cycle adjustment. And that's the phrase that everybody has to pay attention to. I wish we didn't have to pay attention to these type of stupid phrases, but the markets are on pins and needles. This is what is running the markets. It's tweets and it's central banks. Okay, there is no market. There's tweets and there's central banks. That's it. That is what's moving these markets until they finally look under the hood and they say, holy, you know what, we're out of here. That day will come. If I had a crystal ball, I'd tell you when and you can be prepared and you can make a ton of money. But that's why we say stay diversified and stay vigilant, and that's the best we can do right now. Have a plan and be prepared. Because when it comes, there's going to be opportunity to capitalize on it, believe me when I tell you. But the Federal Reserve wanted to be unified around, this is it, this is one rate cut, and then we're just going to hold off and see what happens. And we're just going to be, you know, coming back to the whole data dependency BS line again. So we'll see what happens next month when they get their meeting, I think in mid-September. But we're anticipating another rate cut this year. I wouldn't be surprised if it takes place next month. Will it be 25 basis points? Will it be 50 basis points? That's going to be up for debate. If they disappoint the markets, however, the crybabies on Wall Street, we can imagine a huge amount of selling. It'll be panic selling. Real quickly, another note on economic news here. There was a report out by the government today that, get this. Since 2018, 500,000 fewer jobs have been created than what was previously reported. That is not good news, ladies and gentlemen. That does not bode well for President Donald Trump, jobs president, who said this is the best economy ever. Look, this is the business cycle. This is what I tweet out to the president here almost on a daily basis now, because I'm getting sick and tired of a lot of the tweets that he's sending out there, pushing the propaganda, pushing that this is the best economy ever. He shouldn't be taking ownership of this. We've had this conversation on this podcast many a time. He needs to get off of it. He needs to get off of it. He shouldn't have taken ownership of the economy, shouldn't have taken ownership of the stock market. This is the business cycle. The business cycle doesn't care who's in the Oval Office. Okay, what's going to happen is going to happen. Now, can the individual in the Oval Office, can, in conjunction with Congress, can they delay a recession? Perhaps. Can they also hasten a recession? Sure, they can. But they can't stop it because they haven't been outlawed, because the business cycle is more powerful than all of these institutions. And thank God for that, because we don't need any type of financial dictator or oligopoly running around anywhere. We just don't need it. So thank goodness the business cycle is still intact. Unfortunately, we have a president who would rather spew out a whole bunch of propaganda and say everything's fine and dandy when it isn't. That's a disservice to this country. It's a continuation of the swamp, for all intents and purposes. It's supposed to be a different kind of president, a different kind of leader. I am unfortunately not seeing that, and I am greatly disappointed with how this president has been operating. But 500,000 fewer jobs than what was previously reported, that ain't good, folks. And that is consistent with a business cycle that is running out of steam, because you are likely going to see more downward revisions. So just for the sake of argument, and I'm just pulling these numbers out at random, say, for example, we had 200,000 jobs created in the month of May, then we get the jobs report for July a couple months later, and then there's revisions to the May numbers. And it comes out, oh, well, it wasn't 200,000, it was 175,000. So you take those downward revisions, you accumulate them over the course of the past year, year and a half, and you come up with 500,000 jobs. That is huge. That is a huge difference. This is in agreement with what we have been talking about since this podcast has been around since February of this year. Again, this is not the president's fault in doing. That's why it was such a foolish mistake on his part to take ownership of this economy, because now he has to take ownership. He has to keep with it. He owns it. You broke it, you own it. That's what you have to do. Now, of course, he's going to blame everybody else. He's going to continue to blame the Federal Reserve. He'll blame China. He'll blame illegal immigrants, perhaps, or at least he'll give the impression that that's who he's blaming. But he's only going to pat himself on the back for anything that looks good. Anything that looks bad, it's going to be somebody else's problem. That's poor leadership. That's another thing that I am disappointed in with this president as well. But that's enough for the economic news, because we do that here on a daily basis as is. So the title of today's podcast, again, is All the World's a Stage. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about what's going on around the world. What is causing the anxiety, the increase in populism, the increase in nationalism, the increase in riots and protests? What's going on here? Because if we want to start with the Hong Kong protests right now. Now, this is allegedly against China trying to increase their power in the semi-autonomous state of Hong Kong. A lot of this has to do with, a lot of it started with an extradition bill, which would have given China the power to extradite Hong Kong citizens into mainland China for, obviously, crimes committed. Caused a whole slew of problems in Hong Kong. We have been witnessing this for the past, going on 12 weeks now. So there's really, it's not going away, not anytime soon. So that's one part. We had the yellow vest riots and protests in France that also lasted many, many weeks. We had Brexit take place back in June of 2016. They're still in it. They are still in the European Union. They were supposed to have left at the end of March. They're still in it. They're supposed to leave on Halloween Day of this year, October 31st. We shall see. We talked about Italy on yesterday's podcast. The rise of populism and nationalism. Again, Italy has, had a very strange alliance, politically speaking, between a far left party and a far right party. Again, the analogy here in the United States would be you have a party of Bernie Sanders and a party of Donald Trump getting together and forming an alliance. Well, that's no more. We had Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte resign yesterday. You have the likelihood that the leader of the far right party, Matteo Salvini, is likely to become the next prime minister. How many headaches is this going to cause for the top brass within the European Union? I couldn't care less. I think the European Union is going to collapse. I think the euro is going to collapse. I think it will basically be non-existent in the course of the next decade, especially if we have a major economic and financial crisis. And it's going to be more than just economics and finance. It's going to be political. It's going to be social. And it's going to last for a very long time, because we have been kicking the can down the road for over a decade. We had the opportunity a decade ago, in the midst of the Great Recession, of the financial collapse, to allow these companies to go out of business, to allow them to file bankruptcy, to go through that process. Maybe there would have been enough assets on the books where they could have survived. They could have come back. They could have been better than what they were before. Because clearly they weren't good before. They were filled with fraud and corruption. Maybe they could have come back better, healthier, stronger. And with the realization that they are no longer going to be able to compete in that same manner. But no, that's not what we did the world over. It was bailouts. It was easy money. It was zero interest rate policy. It was negative interest rate policy, which we still experience. And now we're anticipating that negative rates are going to go deeper into negative territory. And here in the United States, we're going to go back to the zero bound here very quickly. Very quickly. And we might even go into negative territory. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand the historical context of the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates in times of recessions or economic slowdown. We have two to three times the interest rate. So we're at 2% now, call it, right? 2.25%, 2%. We had 5%, 6% in previous recessions, previous economic slowdowns. Now we got 2% to play with. We're going to get to zero extremely quickly. Are we going to go to negative? Because you even had former Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Alan Greenspan, come out, I believe it was just last week, saying that, you know, there's no barrier to negative rates here in the United States. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. And unfortunately, we have a president of the United States who's basically egging on the Federal Reserve to do just that as well. All the world's a stage. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They just want your hard-earned tax dollars so they can continue playing this game. That's all it is. It's everywhere. And at the end of the day, folks, in our basic form, in our raw form as human beings, we're animals. We are part of the animal kingdom. And as animals, we have instincts. And I think the vast majority of the world is starting to wake up because our instincts, we know that something isn't right. I think we've known for a very long time that something isn't right. But now it's just starting to boil. And we live in the world of exponentials. You know, was it 100 years ago we had 1, maybe 2 billion people on this planet? Now there's about 7 billion. Just in the course of 100 years, we've tripled our the world's population. I mean, just compound that into how big our problems are going to be. Because we have not fixed them. These are structural issues. Conversely, on the optimistic side, think how great things could be if we all got together and worked together. However, we're not doing that. We work against each other. And that's another part of today's topic. Because you have the U.S.-China trade war that is continuing. It will continue to escalate. Believe me when I tell you. We have the trade war between South Korea and Japan. That's likely to continue. How severely that will escalate, I'm not as privy on that, but you know, these things don't just start and end, you know, like that. They take time. We have the escalation between India and Pakistan over territory in Kashmir. We have the saber rattling with Iran. And now we have Secretary of State Mike Pompeo out saying, because there's another oil tanker, folks, leaving Iran, or that has left Iran, headed for Syria, and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is saying, you know, the United States is going to do everything within our power to make sure it doesn't get to Syria. Well, the United States of America is the most powerful military in the world with the world's greatest navy. So what is he saying? Are we going to shoot this sucker down? Are we going to sink it into the ocean? What are we going to do? Are we going to take the ship? What are we going to do? All for oil? All because people in Syria need some energy, and we ain't going to have it because it can't go from Iran to Syria. I mean, this is ridiculous. We're still staging an overt coup down in Venezuela. We're all over the place. We're all over the place. This is all a game. It's all a game. It's a stage. All the world's a stage. That's what this is. What is the end game, and what is the cause of all of this? I don't know what the end game is. I really don't. Because it's just going to be another vicious cycle of this same thing, this same pattern. Because what was the end game in the Great Recession? What was the end game of zero interest rate policy? Printing trillions of dollars out of thin air to bail out Wall Street and major corporations. The world over, mind you. Our Federal Reserve, well, not even our Federal Reserve, it's not ours, we don't own it. The Federal Reserve didn't just bail out U.S. entities. It bailed out foreign entities. Did you know that? Were you aware of this? And I actually have to give credit to Senator Bernie Sanders because years ago, when it was Chairman Ben Bernanke, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, testifying before Congress, Bernie Sanders asked him, where did all that money go? Who did it go to? He knew that some of it went to foreign companies and corporations. And what does Ben Bernanke say? I'm not going to tell you. You can look that up. You can probably find that on YouTube if you look for it. That was several years ago, but you could probably find that debate, that little back and forth between Bernie Sanders and Ben Bernanke. And I think there were some other congressmen and senators asking pretty much the same questions. And the chairman of the Federal Reserve said, no, I'm not going to tell you. And they hide behind what's called bank secrecy laws. Bank secrecy laws. Look that up, too. I'm not making that up either. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's not tinfoil anything. That's real. That exists. Look it up. I mean, this is the world in which we live. It's hard for me to say, you know, from another country, what are they supposed to do? But here in the United States, bank secrecy laws, how do those even exist? How do those even exist? We live in a world that's been completely flipped upside down here in the United States. The individual, the citizen, is supposed to have maximum privacy. The government is supposed to have maximum transparency. Is that how it is here in the United States of America? No. It's completely flipped. Complete secrecy with the government and citizens is complete transparency. The government knows everything about everybody. That's not how it's supposed to be. And a lot of it is people doing it to themselves, putting themselves out there on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and a whole host of things. So you're out there on the record, which is fine to voice your opinion. It's very American. You're supposed to. What's not supposed to happen is the government's not supposed to collect all of that data and basically profile you, which is what they're doing. Make no mistake about it. That's what they're doing. People will say, oh, no, not here. You can understand that that's what they're going to do in China because they're communists. That's understandable. But not here. Give me a break. Wake up. Wake up. And that's the point. All the world's a stage. The world's elites, the upper echelons of the income brackets, have more in common with each other than those people do with their own countrymen and women. You understand? This is a big club, folks. Like the late, great George Carlin, the comedian, said, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And that's exactly right. So the end game, though, I have no idea what the end game is, unless it's just to continue to pretty much screw over the middle class and the lower classes of the entire planet. If that's their game, if that's their end goal, they are succeeding extremely, extremely well. And all you have to do is look at the wealth gap, the inequality numbers that we talk about here on a regular basis. And I'm going to have to do some more in-depth research on that because you got to do a deep dive into it because it has economic implications. It has political implications. It has implications for society at large. And I think that in combination is what is leading to all of this rise in populism, all of this rise in nationalism, all of this rise in somewhat protectionist policies. Because it's easier to point the finger at somebody else and blame the Chinese, blame the Mexicans, blame the Iranians, blame the Venezuelans, blame the Russians. It's always somebody else's fault. It's easier for the Indians to blame the Pakistanis, easier for the Pakistanis to blame the Indians than it is to say, guys, we messed up. That's why our economies are in shambles. I told you, and we've had this podcast many months ago, when all else fails, go to war. When all else fails, go to war. Everybody is saber-rattling with everybody. We even have now, beyond the U.S.-China trade war, of course this is linked with it, but beyond the actual trade issues, we now have the United States set to finalize a deal with Taiwan to sell a whole bunch of upgraded F-16 fighter jets to them, and I'm sure a whole host of other equipment. And this is a big no-no for China because they still believe that Taiwan belongs to them and they want them to be reunified with mainland China. Well, I mean, too bad. I mean, this is too bad to China is what I'm saying. I mean, if the United States wants to engage with another free country such as Taiwan in this type of deal, hey, that's too bad. But I understand where China's coming from because the United States wouldn't like it if China was selling a whole bunch of military equipment to Mexico or to Canada. So I understand it. I understand it. But here's what China is saying. They're saying, look, if this deal goes through, we're going to place sanctions on the manufacturers of those military products. And I believe one of the largest in this deal would be Lockheed Martin, because I believe Lockheed Martin is the manufacturer of the F-16. Now, how big of a hit would that put on the U.S. economy? Not much, I don't believe. But nevertheless, it's another signal. It's another escalation, if you will, in the U.S.-China trade war. Again, everything's connected. It's hard to break things apart. That's why I wanted to sort of do this podcast today and sort of just take a breather and step back to say, you know, we've talked about everything. We talk about a lot of things here on a daily basis, but this is global. I mean, we touched on virtually every continent and several countries within those continents because that's how interconnected everything is. And this isn't good news, unfortunately. It could be good news, but it's not. It's not. We could put aside all of these differences, all this stupidity, and work together to solve a lot of the problems that we have created, but that's not what's happening. That's not how it works. Just a little perspective, if you will. I mean, from a very, very high view. What are we at the end of the day? We are floating through space and time on a blue marble. That's what we're doing. In a universe so vast and so great that the human mind can't comprehend how big the universe truly is. Think of that for perspective. And here is what we're doing with each other. We spend trillions of dollars creating weapons of war to kill each other. The United States spends $700 billion a year on defense. That is higher than the next 7 or 8 countries combined. And the vast majority of those 7 or 8 countries are our allies. So what the hell are we doing with all of this money? Where's it going? So you have trillions and trillions of dollars globally per year spent on weapons of mass destruction, whether that's bombs, whether that's chemical agents, biological agents, guns, ammunition, makes no difference. You get the point. Trillions of dollars. What happens if we had spent that money instead on peace? On cures for disease, on water cleanliness, on cleaner energy. I mean, just do the math. We're on a blue marble spinning through time and space. Could you imagine if there were aliens here or something and they flew over this planet or they landed and they were observing this planet and what we were doing to each other? They'd say, we're getting the hell out of here. We're not wasting our time with these beings, with these people. They don't know what they're doing. They can't be that intelligent if they're spending trillions of dollars a year trying to kill each other. I mean, that's just not a safe environment for anybody to observe. We're getting the hell out of Dodge. Who could blame them? Makes no sense to me. Again, I don't know what the end game is. Is it complete and total dominance? Because the 1% of the globe's population, they control the vast, vast majority of the world's assets. How much more do they want? How much more do they need? What are they going to do with it? U.S.-China trade war. South Korea-Japan trade war. India-Pakistan. United States-Iran. United States-Venezuela. Russia, Syria, Brexit, Italy, Hong Kong, China, the yellow vests. Something's happening here, folks. Something's happening, and we all have to be vigilant. We all have to be aware of what's going on, because the things that we talk about here on a daily basis, it's all connected. There's no disconnecting the water from the ice. It's the same thing in a different form. There's no disconnecting it. It's all here. What the media wants to put in front of you day to day, that's going to change. But hey, the media is part of the upper echelons of society too. I mean, we talk about that at length in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. And I just want to say thank you to those who have been becoming more consistent members and followers and subscribers to the Capital News. This website, the YouTube channel, is definitely growing slowly but surely. So a big thanks to all of you guys out there, and a special thanks to you guys out there who have been purchasing the book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, have been seeing a bit of an uptick in some sales on that. But we talk at length on the media in that book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, because there's only a handful of companies. And when I say handful, I'm talking about 5 or 6 media companies that control the vast majority of the information that we see and hear on TV, on radio, and even on the internet. So you think you're really getting a truly fair and balanced version and vision of what's going on in this country and the world? There's just too much going on. And it's in sound bites. It's in debates versus Democrats and Republicans, as if those are the only two solutions possible. If those are the only two solutions possible, we are in a lot of trouble. But that's what we get. The historical context is always missing. Most people don't have time to study this stuff. And even if they do, how many of them are going to do it where it makes a difference? You know, and that's a disservice to the whole process as well, because if you don't understand history, you're doomed to repeat it. And, you know, and that's what we miss, because it's all about clicks on a website. It's all about how many advertising dollars can we get for this program in prime time, as opposed to the truth. That's the world in which we live. I think we are at a crossroads. I think I truly believe this. Before we get to the other side, we will survive this. But before we get to the other side, it's going to be very, very bumpy. It's going to be very, very volatile. And as we have been saying here, we have been predicting volatility. And that's exactly what we have been seeing. And it's exactly what we are going to continue to see for the remainder of this year. And I imagine for well beyond that as well. But I'm going to wrap this podcast up here. We're going to continue to have this type of conversation and then dig deeper into the weeds on all of these topics, because this is our world. We have to be aware of it, and we have to stay diversified. We got to stay vigilant, and I hope you stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.